Paris.
Hello from Paris. Well, no, from London. Hello Paris from London. I'm not there yet. You've beaten me to it. You're there prepping, being incredibly professional. I will swoop in on the train late on Saturday and kick things off on Sunday. How is it?
Well, I wanted to say hello from sunny Paris, but it's raining. I mean, looking at it, it looks as though we're getting all the rain out the way today, which is Friday. And I thought this morning I was going to be really good. I'll get up and go for a run because, you know, I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks sort of hiding from baguettes, which is part of what I do when I'm in Paris. So I thought, start as you mean to go on. I went for a run. I was feeling really good about myself. And then there was like thunder and lightning and I'm running through kind of woods and forests and I got so wet. You know, it's that kind of rain. you stand no chance. There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to shelter. Every drop is like, oh. So I came back. I walked back into the hotel squelching, which, oh, it's just not a nice feeling. So I think at some point I'll be really glad I did it. But when I was kind of squelching back through the hotel lobby, I just thought, oh, there we go. So, but the amazing contrast between our days is, so I'm squelching in a hotel lobby in Paris. Meanwhile, baby Rog, the goat, is settling himself into a new nursery.
Yes, he is. So I dropped him off. He's just doing a last sort of, they do these settling sessions before they actually start so that they're not in a completely sort of strange zone. So yes, I dropped him off and I was expecting him to cry and be really upset, but pretty much just looked at me and was like, bye. So and he went, sometimes at his old nursery, if I was ever sort of chatting to the woman holding him before he went in, he just sort of got so fed up and just started waving at me going, bye, bye, like, leave. he's having a great time. So just do a couple hours a day and then he will be in the whole time whilst I'm in Paris. So he'll have plenty to be getting on with, lots of new things. So hopefully he'll be distracted that mummy's not there. And so it's really good. Yeah, very, very happy. But I'm just waiting for him now. I was going to wait in the car just round the corner, just in case. But he's fine, so I've come home.
Yeah, he's like, Mum, you're cramping my style. Just let me be. But on a serious note, I know you've been away for a week or so, but the French Open, Roland Garros, it's a big one in terms of time. How are you feeling about this time away from the little man?
Well, you say big one. It's the biggest. There's nothing longer, is there? There's nothing as long as French Open.
Australia is because of the travelling. So if I'm thinking actual days away from the family, Australia just edges it because of the travelling time.
But the most amount of days of a tournament is Roland Garros, 15 days. No one can better that. Three Sundays. Wimbledon have done it on one for God knows how long. They've got no floodlights. No night sessions. They've done it on one Sunday. I know they've changed that now, which is sort of fair enough. But just saying, no need for three. But I also very much understand it. It's like, yeah, it's a Sunday. Why not? Let's play. I totally get it. So, I'm not really grumbling about it. It's just, it just feels so long.
Yeah, and I think you find, especially when you're away from family and loved ones, that the beginning of a tournament, you're so wrapped up in the tournament because it's so busy. There is so much going on and we've got the night sessions. It's just as the tournament starts to sort of quieten down and you have more time and you think, well, more time's a good thing. But that's the kind of time you start thinking, oh, yes, you know, you start really thinking about back home. But I think when you arrive, especially arriving Saturday night, we are straight into it. So we've got no night session on the Sunday, then night sessions up to the quarterfinals. But the first thing I noticed yesterday when I arrived, and it was beautiful sunshine, which is amazing, qualifying taking place, were the crowds. They're back. They are back. And boy, are they back. I mean, it's almost took me by surprise because the tournament proper hasn't started. I was actually surprised by the number of people. They were queuing round the block to see Rafa Nadal practice. I'm talking thousands of people on a Thursday afternoon queuing to watch him practice. And then there are the qualifying matches taking place. And it's just really nice to see Roland Garros. They're adding to it every year. It's looking fantastic. It continues to be developed. But do you know something? We've missed the fans, whether we're sitting in a box remotely commentating to actually being on site. And while I'm still waiting for it to take a lot longer to actually get from A to B, and sometimes, as you know, you need to get to A to B really quickly. But yeah, no, I really like yesterday. Do you know what I mean? Just seeing, and I love it. For a practice session, you've got thousands on Philippe Chatrier watching practice.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's probably, or possibly, maybe it's not, but the first taste that I think Emma Raducanu's had of full fans. She had quite a lot of fans out on her court, I saw, whether that was yesterday, I believe. I mean, we're used to it, aren't we, with Federer and Nadal, but it just must be so much pressure. You know, like when you're practicing, you're sort of trying things. You're working on it's not the finished article, right? And you've got all these people looking at you and you're trying to improve things. And yeah, I don't know. It must just be a very bizarre thing because you sort of want to do that behind closed doors because you want people to just see the finished product, right? It's like an artist never wants people to see that halfway through. It's just the end result because it can look absolutely terrible and then suddenly looks amazing at the end. So I don't know. I'd find it a lot of pressure.
And today I was looking at the schedule practice for today, although as I sit and look out the window of the room I'm in, the clouds are so dark. It's warm, but the clouds. And wonderfully, I remembered an umbrella this year for the first time, because it always rains during the French Open. Always rains. It just always
What
does.
Is the forecast for the couple of weeks? Is it supposed to be a nice one? Or
yeah, no, good.
A bit mixed?
Yeah, no, largely good. I think there's the odd spell of thunder, which will come because of temperatures. It's going to get quite hot and humid. So you'll get the odd break in the weather with the rain. But largely, so for Sunday, I think it's 26 and bright sunshine. Even tomorrow, Saturday, it's around 24. But I'm just looking out the window now and I'm thinking, oh, it's, as I say, it's kind of warm. So it's not, you wouldn't put a jumper on, but you'd need waterproofs because it's just wet and it's, oh, the clouds are horrible. But looking at the practice schedule.
So I bring waterproofs.
Bring waterproofs and bring like a little umbrella because.
Okay, I like to travel incredibly light. I like to just bring the carry-on suitcase, you know, that you can put in the overhead luggage and I just survive off of that.
Whoa, hang on. For 2 weeks, you will bring a carry-on suitcase?
That's my plan, yes. That is my plan.
Wow. That is, you need to tell
me. I just like travelling light.
No, but you also need things because, as you mentioned, this is the longest of the tournaments.
I have a suitcase that's the size up. Actually, maybe I'll go for that one.
No, take a suitcase.
It's just a little bit bigger.
Take a suitcase.
But it's not huge. I like to just sort of travel light. That's my style.
I've never managed it. Then you have children and then it's impossible. And I actually got to the hotel yesterday and checking in and they say, your room is on the 7th floor. It's lovely, on the 7th floor. And he said, but I'm afraid the lifts are broken. And I was like, and my suitcase probably weighs around 30 kilos because I don't travel light. And I was thinking, oh, 7th floor, right. So that was kind of my workout yesterday was getting the, and then you get the suitcase to the 7th floor and you're thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to survive. And then suddenly, oh, the lifts are working. And you're like, oh. So maybe if anything's going to teach me to travel light, it's that experience. But no, I would bring a little bit more for that. I think if you can do it, you can do it. But I'm very impressed if you can travel that light. That is, even when you were playing, did you travel light?
Well, I just found that I packed loads of stuff and I just didn't use half of it. It was just sort of annoying. But I just need to know. That's the thing, is I need to study the weather forecast and know what I'm bringing.
But you,
I'm also going to do some shopping in St Pancras because I am long overdue on buying clothes. And now with sort of the season change, I need to get some stuff. So I will do some shopping there on my way. So I'm going to go an hour early so that I can buy a few bits.
Oh, this sounds all very civilised. But as everyone knows who's been to Roland Garros, you're going to get all the weather on you. It is going to rain at some point. It's probably going to be quite hot at some point. And I went through a couple of years when I went to the Laundrette. So halfway through, I'd travel light, go there, get it all done, feel very satisfied and come back. But this year, I just went for it and brought too much stuff. So yeah, weather-wise, anyone who's coming out to Paris, it's looking pretty settled, but just have one of those little umbrellas or a waterproof, I would suggest. And for those today who are coming out to watch practice, very interesting on the men's practice side, Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz practicing together, which you'd say, well, kind of from Djokovic's point of view, it makes sense because he wants to practice with the best players in the world right now. And as he and Sasha Zverev have said, Alcaraz is the best player in the world right now. But also Djokovic, he's keeping an eye on that next generation. You know, he's wanting to test himself against them, see where they're at, see where he's at. So can you imagine the amount of people for that one? And also, if you want to see a one-handed backhand display, we've got Stan Wawrinka and Dominic Thiem practicing together. And again, you're going to get, A, great to see both of those back, but thousands of people who are going to brave the rain to watch these guys practice.
Yeah, I don't know if Djokovic will be sizing up Alcaraz because they have just played and they played that long match in Madrid. But as you say, just sort of wanting to train with the best. They want to be tested, want to be pushed, want to see how his shot feels in these sorts of conditions, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, not surprised at that. And so good to see Stan back and team as well. And we just, two of the very best at Roland Garros, and love to see them do well, at least, you know, play well.
Yeah, you know, just great to see them back at this level. If we look at the draw, I mean, the headline yesterday. So in the first quarter of the draw, of the men's draw, we have Novak Djokovic, defending champion, top seed. He's in the same chunk as Nadal, who's in as the fifth seed, looking for his 14th title. Stan Wawrinka, we just mentioned, could play Nadal in the second round. You've also got Felix Auger-Aliassime and Riley Opelka in that quarter. But the headline was, if you look at the top half together, you then throw in Carlos Alcaraz, who's the sixth seed here. Just his second Roland Garros. I mean, remember, he came through qualifying last year. Now we're talking about him as the best player in the world right now. And also, Sasha Zverev is in that second quarter. And we also find Dominic Thiem. So if we're looking for sort of the top-heavy, bottom-heavy side, you've just got to look in the top half. And there's a couple of messages on Twitter saying, anybody who thinks that Grand Slam draws are rigged, this should be proof that they're not, because no tournament organiser would want to load it as it's been loaded in this top half.
Yeah, and whilst I understand what that person is saying, it's also, I find it a ridiculous statement, because, I mean, nobody thinks that these tournaments are rigged. Like, it's just absurd. This is professional sport. It's just an irritating conversation, because nobody in their right mind who knows anything about anything thinks that there is a remote chance that a Grand Slam draw is rigged. It's just absolute nonsense. Anyway, I mean, it is slightly rigged, I suppose, in the sense that we have seeds. So the plan is that the seeds don't play each other early. That's the point. We're trying to help them get deep in the tournament and spread them out. So I suppose that is the rigging that goes on, is just trying to encourage the big names deep in the tournament. But when you've got Alcaraz ranked six, when he's arguably the best player at the moment, and you've got, Nadal not ranked where he should be as well, then yeah, it all just gets jumbled up. I mean, it's completely weighted in the top half, isn't it? I mean, if Tsitsipas isn't in the final, I don't know what's going on. But whoever can battle it out of that section is unbelievable. And for Zverev to have Alcaraz in his section, I mean, look, it's rough. Don't get me wrong, it is absolutely horrendous for him. It's going to be a chance, though. I mean, what's his stat? Is it that he's never beaten a top 20 player in a slam? Is that right?
Zverev.
Something like, Zverev's never beaten a top 20 player. I think it's something like that. It's quite extraordinary for somebody who's been in the top five for such a long time. But if he wants to go deep, then he's going to have to get past that young Alcaraz.
Yeah, very young. Projected quarterfinals: Djokovic, Nadal, Zverev, Alcaraz, Rud, Tsitsipas, Rublev and Medvedev. Now, we did our predictions last week and you went for Tsitsipas to win. Is that right? Am I right?
I did.
You went for Tsitsipas to win. I went for Nadal. I'm kind of sticking with Nadal. I mean, but the big thing we know about Nadal, and we know the special feeling about this place, 13 titles, being on Philippe Chatrier, et cetera, but it's the body. And I know he doesn't want to talk too much about the foot, because it's a little bit like the knees in the olden days. He kept being asked about the knees and he said, well, I'm always going to have this tendonitis in the knees. And it seems that Nadal is dealing with a lot of, we'd call them, wouldn't you, chronic injuries. He's managing injuries that he's had for a long time, and this foot is just another of those.
Sure. But look at his game style. I mean, it's inevitable. It's remarkable that he's still playing at this age with the way that he has played. Because, you know, you look at Murray, for example, as well. That's just part of it. It's not a game built to last. That's just how it is. And you know, you can't really dictate that from a very, very young age. I think it's only really once you're established near the top of the game would you ever start thinking about longevity. It's very difficult to manage for him. It's just how it is. He's always been He's always had a lot of injuries because his body takes an absolute battering. I mean, he's the most intense, most physical. He's an absolute beast on the court. You know, this is just sort of expected, I suppose. It's sort of unexpected that he's still being able to turn up to Roland Garros and actually have a legitimate chance of winning. It's quite extraordinary. So it'll be interesting to see how somebody like Carlos Alcaraz now, with much better sports science, much better knowledge of what the physical side does to you. You know, you can see what's happened to Federer, Serena, Nadal, for example, Murray, and see how the bodies break down. And yeah, just that better sports science to rely on, whether he'll be able to bypass that. Because it's all very well us talking about the movement of Alcaraz, the intensity that he brings to the court, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, is that a sort of game style he's still going to be playing and winning slams at 36 years old? I don't know. We'll see.
Do you see Alcaraz feeling any pressure coming into Roland Garros? Because he does seem that he's someone that doesn't get crushed by the weight of expectation. Maybe it's still too early and maybe he will feel the expectation. He seems to thrive on it. And I think maybe a part of that is the team around and the experience with the likes of Juan Carlos Ferrero. But he's a young guy who everyone is now looking at, second favourite with the bookies behind Djokovic to win Roland Garros. And it's missing Rome is something that the oldies do, doesn't it? I'm just going to rest myself. You don't expect it for the young ones. But he took that approach to not play Rome to get ready for Roland Garros. I mean, do you think he will be affected by Roland Garros and the sudden attention and pressure there'll be on him? Or from what you've seen, you don't think that's going to affect him?
I don't think so. I wouldn't like to guess at what would happen in the final because, you know, he is still very young. Yeah. And that is a different scenario. I don't think that he's impacted by the pressure. As you say, I think he really does thrive on it. You know, there's no more pressure than a Grand Slam final. So, you know, as I say, things could change. It could just get a little bit too much. I have to say that there has been one match, where it all got too much for Carlos Alcaraz. And it feels like a lifetime ago, but it wasn't that long ago. It was in Paris-Bercy. And he was playing against Hugo Gaston. And he lost very comfortably in the end. But the atmosphere was off the scale. You know how the French crowd can get. They were unbelievable. Yep. Gaston was doing Gaston things all over the place. It was a sensational match. Alcaraz was playing pretty well, like, don't get me wrong. It was a match that absolutely, without that crowd, he would have rolled through. There's just no two ways about it. But he got completely overwhelmed by that French crowd. It was so loud because it's indoors as well. So it makes it even louder. You know, I don't think it was even on the main court, to be honest. But he just didn't know what to do. I mean, he had it wasn't like the crowd were against him. They were just obviously hugely supporting Hugo Gaston. And so it would be fascinating. I haven't actually studied the draw that closely. If he were to play a Frenchman and to see what would happen there. But that's the one time I've ever seen him get overwhelmed.
That is, it's an amazing half the draw just to think that we could have Stan Wawrinka against Rafa Nadal as a second round match, and Dominic Thiem floating around in that second quarter, Karen Khachanov also. Into the third quarter, we find your tip for the title in Stefanos Tsitsipas, who plays Lorenzo Musetti in the first round. We've also got Shapovalov against Rune in the first round, which is an interesting one. And then Casper Ruud against Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who will retire after Roland Garros. So, I mean, I'm assuming that will be a night match, or at least a Philippe Chatrier match, because that's a very tough one for Tsonga, and B, this could be his last ever professional tennis match.
I know. It's always difficult, isn't it, when somebody retires, but at least he gets to finish here and, a good match to potentially go out on. Hopefully he stays in a little bit longer, but it's a tough one. It's a tough ask for him.
That's a really tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, things have been really, really difficult for him physically. And, you know, he just wants to say thanks very much to tennis and off he pops. Just back to Alcaraz, though.
Yep.
Sorry, just to bring it back a second. But it's interesting because I think you said something about the expectation and how it just doesn't seem to faze him. I think there's a real difference because there are other people that have been like that. Nadal is one of them. I think there's a real difference of picking a player who you think is good enough to say, win a slam or reach a final or do whatever, and then there's that much expectation on them because it's like, yeah, they're good enough to win the slam. You know, you could argue somebody like Jannik Sinner, he's good enough to reach a final of a Grand Slam, and there, yeah. You know, he would feel a weight of expectation. And he is a phenomenal talent. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm just talking about levels here. The difference is that Alcaraz isn't good enough to do it. I mean, he's so much better than everybody else that he's playing against. So not everybody, of course, apart from the top few. But even then, recently, really, I mean, those matches against Nadal and Djokovic all the way through Madrid, I don't think he even played that well. I really don't think he played that well in comparison to his level that we saw in Miami. Like, I felt like he was probably like an 8 out of 10 and he was still winning these matches. It was absolutely extraordinary. And that is the mark of those really, really top players. We see that all the time from them. But I do think that there's a big difference. You could pick out a Sebi Korda and go, do you know what, Korda, I could see him making the semis here. And there's that expectation. But it's different when Alcaraz is like, well, actually, he'll start playing. And if he is nervous at all, then within four games, he's like, oh, I'm four love up. I'm just a lot better than this person. Do you know what I mean? And then you just win.
Well, you can see why he's second favourite the bookies, can't you? You can and you can't. In a way, it's crazy that someone who came through qualifying last year, and who this time last year was, what, about 120 in the world, is now six in the world and second favourite in front of Stefanos Tsitsipas, for instance.
Yes, no, sorry, back to Tsitsipas. He, my pick.
He might have something
big
to say about that. The fact, or maybe not, because Alcaraz has done what he's done this year, maybe earned his place with the bookies as second favourite who go through the form. But Tsitsipas will be happier with his draw. So third quarter, just throwing out some names. I mentioned Shapovalov, who's going through a lot of changes. Is it Peter Polansky has now said he's coaching Shapovalov, and
yes,
the Jaime Delgado relationship is over. And we have Daniil Medvedev in the fourth quarter. We have Andrei Rublev in the fourth quarter. We have Jannik Sinner, who you just mentioned, in that fourth quarter at the bottom. And someone else, another Frenchman who's retiring by the end of this year, is Gilles Simon. And he starts against Pablo Carreño-Busta, just sort of highlighting that as another one who's had a fabulous career that's starting to wind down. So that bottom half of the draw is better if you're just looking at names and rankings. And Tsitsipas, you feel, will be happy with how his draw is?
Yeah, in a nutshell. Look, draws are a huge part of this. They always are. And yes, we've had a long time of the very, very best player winning anyway, but the rest of it does tend to the draw is really impactful on who can do well. Yeah, I mean, Tsitsipas is going to have the pressure to make the final. You know, there's no one there that you're thinking, oh dear, that, you know, he's not going to be the favourite for that match. You know, rightly so. He is a second seed, and he's a finalist from last year, of course, and he's going to be the favourite in every match he plays until the final. So, yeah, I mean, maybe if he gets to the final, he'll have something to say against Alcaraz, but really, it's just up to Alcaraz, because if Alcaraz plays how he has done against Tsitsipas previously, Tsitsipas can't win. Because Alcaraz's top level, I'm sorry, but it's better than Tsitsipas's. Like, that's just how it is. So as long as Alcaraz doesn't find his top level, hopefully because of nerves, because of tension, because it's a final, maybe he's tired, whatever else, then of course, you know, I would say that Tsitsipas might be the favourite to win that. But of course, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, let's be honest. It's not finals day yet.
If I gave you the option now to swap and pick Alcaraz to win, because everything you've said, I mean, you're almost convincing me to leave Nadal, the 13-time champion, and jump on Alcaraz to win Roland Garros this year. So if I give you the opportunity now to swap Tsitsipas for Alcaraz, with everything you said, would you take it?
No. Stick with Tsitsipas.
You see, you've built an amazing case for Alcaraz, but that was an immediate no.
And no, and because it's an if. It's if Alcaraz gets to the final. He has to break new ground. He has to do things he's never done before, which, look, he's doing that every week of the year, isn't he, at the moment? But I do think that in the final, I would say that Tsitsipas is the favourite, because the chances of Alcaraz producing his very, very best tennis in the final, I think, are not massively high because of everything else that goes with it. I think that it's difficult. He's now far enough into his career with the wins that he's had that there is real pressure. Like, people are expecting him to win this tournament. People weren't really expecting him to win Miami. It was just sort of like, great, Alcaraz is going to play well here and he's a superstar. You know, things will start to change now. And if it just completely does not impact him, well, then he's not human and too good. Too good. But, you know, look, it's two things. It's if Alcaraz makes the final and if he plays his best tennis in the final, then he wins the tournament. But they're two huge ifs.
Yeah. No, they're mad. And we should say we're not being disrespectful of the world number two, Daniel Medvedev, for not really talking about him. A couple of reasons here.
Oh, yeah. I just said Tsitsipas was a second seed.
He was.
I've totally forgotten about him.
Poor old Daniel. I mean, he took his time out, got his operation, came back, but went to Geneva, didn't get a win. So he will be looking for his first clay win of the season in the first round. Yes, he props up the bottom because he's the world number two. It's not his favourite. So he had a good run last year, but it's not his favourite surface. So I think that's why the conversation hasn't. He hasn't even been included in the conversation. And down there, he's got Andre Rublev, Jannik Sinner, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's the reason why the focus in that bottom half has been on Tsitsipas, who you are going to stick with. I will stick with Nadal. I don't know. Look, the thing I've got hope with in the body is that the foot problem is not a new problem. Yes, it's become very painful, but he has been managing it. And hopefully for him, he can manage it. And boy, look, if he gets title number 14... Oh, wow. That would be incredible. But the way Djokovic has been playing... Oh,
he's got to win quick, though, Nadal. He's got to win quick. That's it. That's what screwed him over in Madrid, was that he had an epically long match that he could have won in two sets. He ended up messing it up and having to win in three. And he knew straight after the match, you could see in his face, he was done. He knew. He limped off. There was no way he could come back the next day and play. The good thing about slams is he's got time off in between his matches. He should get a day in between each match, at least. And he just needs to win quickly. I mean, the first week is so crucial. You know, of course, with that potential quarterfinal against Djokovic, he cannot have any long matches.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's so interesting coming into this Grand Slam because normally when we come into a Grand Slam, there's one, possibly two in the men's, and we kind of have a feeling who is going to take it. Then it comes to the women's and we're like, well, I can give you 10 names, could possibly give you 15, but I probably couldn't narrow it down. Coming into this tournament, we're like, well, if Iga Świątek doesn't win, we'll be really, really surprised because she
really surprised.
She's on a tear. It's unbelievable. She is looking to extend a 28-match winning streak, unbeaten run. So she's a first quarter top seed, world number one. So she's at the top. Now, if I throw out a few names in this first quarter, you've got some Grand Slam champions in there. We've got Yelena Ostapenko, who could come up against Simona Halep. Simona Halep working with Patrick Mouratoglou while Serena Williams isn't playing at the moment. Halep, I didn't realise, she's got a really good record at Roland Garros. Yes, a former champion. 31-10, so 31 wins at Roland Garros. And then also in there, coming back from injury recently, is Karolina Pliskova in that quarter. Świątek starts against a qualifier. Just from those names. And of course, there can be other players that come through, but who would Świątek see as her biggest challenge, or does she see anyone as her biggest challenge at the moment with the way that she's playing?
Genuinely, she's the best player by some way at the moment. And it would take her having to play below like an 8 out of 10 to even potentially lose. Heavy favourite. I don't think it's going to faze her. I think we'd all love for her to win as much as she's already won it. She won it when there was no crowd and it would just be awesome. For her to, you know, win it with like a packed stadium, because she's number one in the world, right? So I think that's great. I mean, there are going to be some threats, but are they really threats? No, I'd probably say they're challenges, problems to solve, but no real threats. You know, and I don't think that she's going to be bothered by the expectation. Again, very similar to what I was saying with Alcaraz. For Świątek, she's just that much better than everybody at the moment, and especially on clay, and that's it. And as I say, there are some problems to overcome. You know, you take on a Jabeur or, you know, whoever playing well, and it's tricky, of course, but as long as she just deals with it, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, the one thing she was bothered about recently is she didn't do very well in a Nadal quiz because it's her idol. She loves him. There was footage of Nadal coming out onto court and sort of shaking hands with her as they swapped over in practice. Because Sebi Korda, whose cat's called Nadal, came through on top. And I think she was a bit gutted. I think she said something like, if you tested me on, what was it? Taylor Swift and someone else, I would have done better or something. I don't know.
Which well, she's painted herself as a Nadal super fan. What do you expect? Yeah,
I know, but you're coming up apparently against another Nadal super fan in Seb Court. Which, if you had to do like a quiz or a specialist subject on Mastermind, what would it be?
Flags.
Wow, that was quick. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My knowledge of flags is an awful lot better than my knowledge of tennis. And when I'm on a quiz, I am awful when it comes to tennis rounds. Really awful. So, yeah.
Flags.
That's it. Yeah. Flags. General geography, I'm okay, but flags particularly, I've always had a knack for them. And you know when what? I've travelled, paid attention.
I think
so.
If ever we do another tennish when we video it, when we record it, I'm going to just hold up some flags because it would go down really badly in a podcast. Like now, if we did it, it would just be such an awful listen with you just randomly saying countries. So I think next time we do a video one, I'm going to hold up some flags. Okay. And we're gonna put you to the test. I like that. Okay, so flag. Okay.
There isn't really much need to do that. As in, I pretty much know them all.
No, I'm gonna find some really obscure ones.
I'm normally like three or four off. Like,
so you're sounding super confident. So I'm gonna find some really obscure flags from some really obscure places and hold them up. Okay.
Right, okay, well, so. I'm talking about like national flags. You can't get like some random region in Spain.
I'm not going to do someone's local tennis club flag. So, I'm gonna do major ones, but like, well, maybe I think they're obscure. But okay, so that is one for the future. So people watch and listen out for that.
It's not the most exciting. What would your specialist subject be?
I don't think I'd have one. I think general knowledge is too wide a subject, but I just know random stuff. Whether it's
general knowledge, my specialist subject is just another round of general knowledge.
But it's like in a pub quiz, I think I'd know some flags. I'd know some stuff about reality TV, tennis, lots about football, maybe a little bit more about Chelsea, having been
music.
So ensconced in Chelsea. I don't know. Maybe I'd know some random stuff about music that you wouldn't expect, but they wouldn't
right.
be. I wouldn't.
So
say
you would be helpful on a quiz team. You would be. You'd be contributing.
Yeah, I think on a pub quiz, but I wouldn't. It wouldn't be like geography. Right, Gigi, geography. Like absolutely not. Or his,
I literally contribute to geography and music, and then a little bit of pop culture, and that is it. I have no knowledge of anything else.
I think I'd. I think sport. I'd be okay on sports. A bit of music, maybe a bit of history. Geography, no. So we'd be quite good because I wouldn't geography at all, not at all. So I think we'd complement each other on a pub quiz. So
yeah, okay, cool.
Okay, but I'm gonna sort the flag thing out. Going down the draw. Someone else.
If you want, we can do a flag quiz right now.
I can
quiz you. I can quiz you with some fun with flags.
No, but I can't see you. So how are you going to show me the flag?
No, I was just going to ask you questions about flags, that's all.
What do you mean you'll ask me? What would a question about a flag be?
Well, just like standard, like as in basic things about, like, so what, which colour appears more, like, the most on flags?
Oh, God, you know that. Wow.
Stuff like that.
Oh,
What's the oldest flag? You know, all those sorts of things.
Okay,
yeah.
No, we're not doing that. No.
How many flags have Union Jacks on?
Stop. No. Wow.
Yeah, back to the women's draw.
We're doing the tennis. Flags to cover the future. And I'm moving into the second quarter. Although I can tell you, someone in the second quarter has a specialist subject, and that's Yulia Putintseva. Chess. Loves chess.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I can play chess, but I only think about the move that I'm about to make and that's it. So I don't do very well.
Well,
me and Ben once went on holiday and we played chess every evening and it was just atrocious. Neither of us are that good at it.
Well, maybe next time you have to play against one of the twins loves chess. I mean, he's six.
Oh, really?
And he plays tournaments. with like
no
under 12.
No way, I didn't know that. That's so yeah. cool.
And he's sort of, I don't know how his mind, I sort of watch him play chess. I'm like, oh, I don't understand. Because like you, I'm thinking of that move. He's kind of a couple of moves ahead. And he's trying to explain it to me, saying, oh, this person, because they do it sort of online, so you can't see the other person, but you know, they move their pieces. And he said, oh, he's going to do this now. And I'm like, how did you know that? So it baffles me. But Putintseva loves playing chess, has done it from a young age, and really, really loves it. So she's in the second quarter. This is random stuff that I know. See, this is where I excel. Really random stuff that no one really needs to know about. Heading up the second quarter, we do need to know, is Paula Badosa. First Grand Slam quarterfinal was at Roland Garros last year. We know what she's done since. Rybakina and Keys are in there. Kasatkina's in there. Shelby Rogers is in there. Sabalenka's in there. Collins is in there. I mean, that's a chunky little quarter.
It is a chunky little quarter. And I am just very hopeful that I'm going to get to do lots of Danielle Collins matches, as you just mentioned. So I'm hoping that she's going to do very well. I'm such a big fan, and I've just been obsessingly watching YouTube videos of her shouting, come on, and just being, especially through the pandemic when there were no crowds, it was just so hilarious. Because there was no one, there's like one person clapping. She's just screaming. But you know, we've got, yeah, I really enjoy Danielle. I really enjoy the way that she speaks. She played fantastically well at the Aussie Open, of course, reaching the final there. And I just like that she is just unapologetically herself. And she knows how it looks. And she's like, I'm not here to look good. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to compete. I'm here to win. And that's it. So deal with it. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. I think she could go on a good run here. She's been a semi-finalist before, isn't she? Semis? At least quarters. Semis?
She's
very well.
She's got a good form. And if the body can stay fit and healthy. And as I say, the yelling is something else. Now, if we go into if that's chunky, the third quarter in football would be called the group of death. You know, if it's a World Cup draw, Champions League draw, there's always that group you think, I don't want to be in that group. So in this chunky section, even chunkier, we've got Ange Jabeur, who recently said, I thought this is a wonderful quote. She said, I'd love people to look at the draw and say, oh shit, I play Ons. She said, I'd really like people to say that when they look and see my name and think, I don't want to. And I'm sure they do. But look at who's in this little section with her. So the other three seeds in her section are all Grand Slam champions. Emma Raducanu, Angelique Kerber, who I know is form-wise, and Petra Kvitova. You've also got in that section, because we're not finished, Maria Sakkari, who's the fourth seed semi-finalist here last year. And then, shall we not forget, Naomi Osaka and Amanda Anisimova, who face off in the first round. We've also got Bianca Andreescu in there, Leila Fernandez, and Belinda Bencic.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of names, isn't it? But I mean, that's how it feels with the women's draws, because we've had so many years now of having lots of winners, lots of new top teners, lots of big runs. You know, Andreescu up to the top, then she went away. Osaka up to the top, then she went away. Raducanu winning a slam, and now she's not. You know, there's so many names, you know, those slam winners, slam finalists now that have all gone deep. And they're just, it's incredible, isn't it? That's what comes from that period of time. But what I think it's done is it's really pushed the level on all in all. Like, as you say, you read through that quarter, it's just crazily good. But I think that because they all have that experience, it's just everybody's just sort of lifted up a bit. Now, possibly, look, you called it. I said it wasn't going to happen. I'm not admitting it yet, but possibly we are in the era of the Swiatek domination. Possibly. It might be starting. Who knows?
Come on, say it. Come on.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. If she wins one of the next couple of... If she wins both the next slams, then fine. But you know what I mean. So, yeah. So we're in that potentially in that period of domination, which has sort of come out of it. She's just sort of maybe risen to the top. But everyone else, I mean, it's very busy. I mean, some of the players that aren't even in the top 10 are just insanely good. But yeah, absolutely. Everybody... I don't think anyone enjoys playing Ons. Everybody loves Ons, but they walk on court and go, oh, God, this is going to be fun, isn't it? It's tough. Like I was telling you, when I played against her, I was I was annoyed. when I won the first set, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to three now. I'm just going to have to be out it for ages. So I said, there's no way. Oh, it was just so painful. I just wanted to get off the court. But there you go. Yeah, when I won that first set, I remember distinctly being like, okay, I'm done now. I just want to go. So, yeah, but how strong is that, though? Those names are incredible.
Oh, it's it. But I think the funny thing is, and you know, Ons Jabeur, who people do, as you say, walk on court and think, oh, I don't want to play her. She's the clay court match win leader this season. All those names I've read out. Yes, we lose one of Anisimova and Osaka in the first round. Anisimova came out top against Osaka at the start of the year. But we're still saying, despite all those names, oh, yeah, Świątek will win. So it's incredible. And then we get into the fourth quarter. We haven't even mentioned defending champion Barbora Krejcikova, second seed, because, like Medvedev, she's been out injured for a while. Now, this can be her first tournament back. There's been some kinesio tape on her that I've seen in practice. She was at the draw looking fabulous when the draw took place yesterday evening in Paris. What she did last year, I still think, I know what Raducanu did was stunning, but what Krejcikova did to win both the singles and doubles and to have been outside the top 100 the October before, I still think it's quite, quite extraordinary. But maybe we shouldn't expect too much because of the injuries she's gone through. And in that section, I'll just throw some names out for you. Azarenka, Stevens, Kontaveit, Coco Gauff and Garbiñer Muguruza. So again, some big heavyweight names that we're rattling off.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it was a bit of a rough one, wasn't it, when Krejcikova got injured. She just played so much tennis. Again, she was a winning machine at the time, got in such a ridiculous role. So hopefully she'll be able to produce a decent level. It's just great that she's able to come and be here as defending champion, because that's, you get so much with that, you know, like coming back to the tournament, the way that you're treated, the way that you're spoken to. You are the reigning champion, so really good to see her back. I mean, I can't really see her winning it again or going particularly deep. It's just too much of an ask when you've been out for that long, because it has been quite a while now.
And I'd like to say a word on Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, who, well, she's had the knee problem for a while. She tried to come back recently on the clay to get ready for Roland Garros, to look to defend the points from reaching the final. Hasn't worked, and she's actually shut down her whole season, her whole year. She said, you know what, it's not working, I'm not right, so that's it, year's finished.
Yeah, pretty incredible, really. So hopefully she's able to fix that. She isn't somebody who's actually been that injury prone through her career, not really significantly. She's been a pretty consistent player, to be honest, since she was so young when she broke through. But yeah, really disappointing for her. Of course, she did so well at Roland Garros last year, reaching the final and finally making that sort of big breakthrough that people had just expected of her, I think, for such a long period of time. Everybody's always really rated her. I mean, she was a phenomenal talent as a junior, but it doesn't really matter how early you do things, it's about what you then do after that. So yeah, just fingers crossed she's able to get back. That is a big old chunk of time that she's going to be out for. So yeah, as I say, fingers crossed she can get back and get fit and healthy and back out on tour, because, you know, she's not she's actually not super young. I know that she reached that final. It was, you know, a big breakthrough for her. But, I mean, she must be 29, 30.
Yeah, it's harder, isn't it? Obviously, though, what she's realised, she needs that time, if she's going to come back, to rest the knee and get better. So we wish her a speedy recovery. Now, last chance to change your predictions of Tsitsipas and Świątek.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm sticking with Tsitsipas and Świątek. I'm very happy with it. I think they're favourite to win here. Tsitsipas is just going to let all the big names just battle it out. It's going to be like Royal Rumble. You're going to be, whoever makes it through to the final is going to be battered, bruised. They would be missing a tooth, blood pouring out of them, all hair's been ripped out, all sorts. Tsitsipas is going to bowl up, fresh as a daisy, and that's it. Win his first Grand Slam. Oh, and Świątek's probably not going to lose a set.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you from Świątek, despite all those names we have rattled off. And Nadal, I was really confident a while back, his start to the season, how he was playing. The body, I don't know what this body's going to do, but there is something about this place. So I'm going to stick with Nadal, but the looming large Djokovic and how he's playing is frightening. Alcaraz and what he's doing at the moment is slightly terrifying, but I will stick with Nadal. What I'm going to do now, there's a break in the rain, which is amazing. So I'm going to try and make a dash from one place to the other. I've also going to do a bit of flag prep, because I don't want you to start randomly asking me questions about flags. Anyway, that wasn't the deal. Why were you asking me questions about flags when flags are your specialist subject?
I don't know. It was just more of a... Look, I really like flags.
It's coming across.
Just like talking about them.
And this is weird. The amount of time I've known you, I have not known that you really like flags.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, it's not something really to shout about, but... I enjoy it.
Well, you know, you've given me ideas for future birthday and Christmas presents.
Excellent. There you go.
I don't know what... There's got to be like a big book of flags or
something. Oh, and you'll have to help me with suggestions. I'm going to have to bring a little gift home for the little man as well. So you're good at picking up gifts.
Oh, yes. No, I've gone through the baby stages of buying gifts at Grand Slam. So I will take you to the shop and get you gifts sorted. I'm looking forward to you being out here. I cannot wait. And hopefully, if we find the time, which is going to be the hard thing, we will kind of round up and get everything done after week one of Roland Garros.
Perfect. Can't wait. Actually, I cannot wait to go. I'll see you soon.
Safe journey.
Yeah.